this is probably worth getting on camera, our attempt to seduce Otto into the bed. Megan, too, is giving him major treats to bribe him into staying in his bed, because this is now a new habit. He leaves before. Look, you saw him. You know he's still well. He's very frisky, and there's nothing I can do. Hi, everybody. It's Fireside Chat number
257.
I'm so annoyed we missed one out of 257. And it was because I had COVID, which didn't prevent me, but people, I felt, I didn't want to scare people. Though I couldn't care less. I'd be around, I was willing to be around people with COVID the whole time. Other than that, we didn't miss one. The whole COVID, the whole lockdown, the whole everything. I'm very proud of that. We want to be in your, I don't like the royal we. I want to be in your life, period. During good times, during bad times, and there have been a lot of bad times. I'm Dennis Prager. This is the Fireside Chat. We have a fireside, but as you saw, Otto, after three, what is that? Marrow what?
Marrow roasts.
Marrow roasts. We could not cajole him into staying in that bed. I don't know why after like 230, totally placid, happy to lie
that
there.
Was a surgery. I think he's
think the surgery?
Yeah.
Oh, really? That's interesting. Anyway, welcome. It's my chance to talk to you about whatever's on my mind and for me to take your questions. It's completely spontaneous, as often becomes obvious when some real corkers come out of yours truly. And then I take your questions. So on my mind is a big subject. Well, big subjects are always on my mind, which is a subject unto itself. I analyze my mind. It's fun to analyze yourself. I'm not talking about being preoccupied with yourself, but to look at yourself from outside of yourself. That's a good thing. Be that as it may, the topic is your parents. Whew. That's already an emotionally driven subject. It's such an issue all through all of history. The child-parent relationship is usually emotionally challenging. That doesn't mean bad, but it's very, very rarely a smooth journey. So I want to address that subject from my favorite source of how to live a life, the Ten Commandments. Honor your father and your mother. And it's really helpful, and I'm going to tell you why. First, you'll find this of interest. I have said this, and I might have even said this, was it 4 years ago?
Yeah, 2018.
Well, I might have said it then, because I've been saying this for many years, when I teach the Ten Commandments and the Bible generally. So listen to this. There's a commandment to love your neighbor. You know, love your neighbor as yourself. There's a biblical commandment to love the stranger. There's a biblical commandment to love God. But there's no biblical commandment to love your parents. And for most people, or many people at least, I don't know, most, thank God. I think what God is interested in, and yes, I think he's the source of the Ten Commandments, is how you behave toward your parents, not how you feel. How you feel about your parents is between you and your parent, or between you and yourself, or between you and your shrink, your psychoanalyst or psychotherapist, between you and your best friend, between you and your spouse, but not between you and God. You are allowed, as it were, not to like them, not to love them. That's not the issue. The issue is to honor them. Now, it's an interesting thing, and this is where my knowledge of biblical Hebrew has been so helpful in my writing of my commentary on the Bible, the Rational Bible. Volume 3 is just about to come out of the 5 volumes, Deuteronomy. I hope you'll read it because it's meant to be life-changing. So the word in Hebrew to honor, in Hebrew, let me explain Hebrew for a moment. Almost all Hebrew words have a 3-letter root. We don't have that in English, so I can't give you an example. You know, to just take a noun, house, parent, fish. None of them have 3-letter roots, so it's not applicable. But in Hebrew, it is. And so a verb will come out of those 3 letters, a noun, and maybe a few different nouns. So here is a very interesting thing. The 3 letters that form the word honor are also the 3 letters that are the word in Hebrew for heavy. Hebrew does not have vowels. Vowels are added dots and lines above and below letters as a general rule. In English, so let's say the word fish, use that again. So it's F-I-S-H. So in Hebrew, it would be F-S-H. And you would have a dot under the F to tell you how to pronounce it. Fi or foo or phi. I think I made it clear. So listen to this. This is fascinating. The word in the Ten Commandments is kabed. B and V are the same letter. They just, one has a dot, the B has a dot, but it's the same consonant. And the B without the dot is a V. So it's the same, again, the same word. Kabed is honor, and kaved is heavy. So the root of honor is, if you will, treat your parents with heaviness, not with lightness. That's, by the way, this will blow your mind. The word to curse in Hebrew is the same root as the word light. So it says, don't curse your parents. It can literally mean, don't take your parents lightly. Taking them heavily is honor. Taking them lightly is a form of cursing them. That's why it's so obviously helpful that I know biblical Hebrew in teaching this stuff. So you have to take your parents heavily, if you will. It's a big deal, your father. It's a big deal, your mother. So let's say you don't love them, okay, or even dislike them. You still have to honor them because they're not just another person. If you dislike your neighbor, there's no commandment to honor them. Yes, I know it says love your neighbor as yourself, but if your neighbor is an a-hole, I think there's an understanding that you might try to love them, but it's not going to work. Okay. But by the way, there's no commandment to honor anyone other than parents. This is fascinating. It's reserved for parents. There is a complete breakdown, almost complete breakdown of that commandment in our society. And it's partially parents' fault, by the way, because they took their role lightly. A lot of parents, millions upon millions, at least in America, I can't speak for whatever country you're in, if you're watching from outside of the United States. But in America for generations now, since World War II, basically, parents have wanted to be their kids' pals, not their parents. Their biggest yearning was that their kid loved them. Not a good idea. Your biggest yearning is that you act honorably and then make it easy for them to honor you. Whether they love you when they're 12 or not should not be your overriding concern. If your aim is always to be loved by your child, you will be a lousy parent, definitionally, because you won't do what it takes to make a good person out of your child, which may often involve your not being liked at that time. You know, when I've asked on my radio show, this was really an education for me. I did an hour once. Remember, my radio show is my laboratory of humanity. It's phenomenal that I could talk with, not just to, so many people. So I asked once on a show, if you didn't take drugs when you were a kid, why didn't you? I had no idea what people would answer. And the most common answer was, because my mother would kill me. That's interesting, isn't it? And that's fear of a parent. That's not love of a parent. That's fear. And by the way, there is actually, won't sit well with many of you, there is actually a law that you should fear your mother and father. Mother came first there. Father came first in the Ten Commandments to show that they're equally important parents. It sounds terrible. You should fear your parents, but you should. That's a perfect example. My mother would kill me if I took drugs. If you didn't fear her, you would never say that. Fear doesn't mean you walk around scared of a tyrant. You walk around scared of corporal punishment. I'm not talking about that. Well, actually, corporal punishment is subject unto itself. I didn't engage in it, but I've never declared it always wrong. I've talked to too many people who had it and said they benefited from it. So let me give you an example of honoring a difficult parent. My grandmother, may she rest in peace, my father's mother, was a difficult woman. That was her nature or her environment, whatever reason. My father called her every night of the week. It was really something. And he did it from, we didn't have cell phones then, so he did it from one of the house telephones in the kitchen. So periodically I saw what happened, and it made a big impression on me. My father would call his mother, and within a minute, I would hear yelling at the other end. I didn't understand what she was yelling because it was in the Jewish language of Yiddish, or Jewish, and I didn't speak that. I speak Hebrew, but not, it's a different language from Yiddish. But she spoke it. She came from East Europe, Russia, where they Jews spoke that. That was their language, a combination of Hebrew and German. Anyway, she'd just be yelling at him, and he never yelled back. I'll tell you what he did. When she'd start yelling at him, he'd put the phone gingerly on the kitchen table. That's how I heard the yelling. Then about every minute or so, he would pick it up and go, "Yeah, Ma, yeah." And then he'd put it back down. Made a big impact on me. He honored his difficult mother. Picked her up every Sunday for lunch in our home. Tell you how difficult she was. And I don't mean to badmouth her. I had a wonderful relationship with her. I mean, not close, but certainly very warm. But she was difficult, and here's a great example. My mother prepared a four-course meal for the grandparents almost every Sunday. And she was a great cook. But my grandmother, who really was not a fan of my mother because she married her son and took him away from her. After the meal, which my mother really laboriously worked at making, my grandmother would compliment the cantaloupe. Yes, the cantaloupe was delicious. Of course, my mother didn't prepare the cantaloupe. You know, God did, or nature did. It was a living joke. I thought it was hilarious. I have a very easygoing nature. And I saw what was happening as a kid and thought it was hilarious. It's look, sort of, I waited for the grapefruit to get complimented. Not the chicken, not the roast, not the pudding, not the bread, nothing my mother made, just the fruit. She was difficult. But they honored her. That's my point. They honored her. Why is the honoring of parents so important? Because it's very important to establish hierarchy in life. It is ultimately, from a Ten Commandments perspective, honoring of parents is a conduit to the honoring of God. If you learn to honor the parent on earth, you will ultimately be much more capable of honoring the parent in heaven. That's why it's the only commandment on the tablet. There were two tablets of the Ten Commandments, 5 and 5. The first 4 are about laws between man and God. And the last 6 are between humans and humans. Don't murder. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Don't bear false witness. Don't testify to lies. And don't covet what your neighbor owns. But interestingly, honor your father and mother is with the listing of the tablet of laws between man and God. It's the vehicle to God, the honoring of parents. And it's also, to give you an idea of how important it is considered by the Ten Commandments, or if you will, by God, it is the only one of the Ten Commandments that promises a reward on earth, so that your days are long in the land that I give you. In other words, civilization depends on parents being honored. And it's true. It is absolutely true. Here's a proof. Every tyranny, every totalitarian regime undermines parental authority. The Nazis and the communists made a big effort to have children honor the regime or the party rather than the parent. Both did that. Your obligation is to the state or the party or the ideology, not to your parents. That's why I'm very worried about the undermining of parental authority in America. It can only mean that those who are doing it are dangerous. There is no other explanation. That's why this is such a big deal, the parent issue. We're going to hide from you your child's gender identity in elementary school. Unbelievable. Here your son is known as Jane, but we're not going to tell you that. There is a big belief that teachers should be the major authority in a child's life, not parents. That's dangerous stuff. So what do you do if you have a truly bad parent? I mean, your parent, take crazy case, your parent is a murderer. Okay. So my answer to those, or your parent, God forbid, molested you as a child. God forbid, because that's true trauma. I can't answer that because there's an old rule in law schools. What is it? Bad cases make bad laws. If you want to make a law that encompasses every instance, you'll have no laws. Should you stop at a red light? Yeah. What if your passenger has a heart attack and you've got to get him or her to a hospital and you can go through a red light because there's no traffic coming the other way? Of course you should go through the red light. But it doesn't stop the law from being a good law. Stop at red lights. So I can't account for those instances of a horrific parent. I can account for the difficult parent, the emotionally distant parent, you name it. But if your parent molested you, then I'm not going to tell you how to treat your parent. Though I will tell you, I know a woman for many years who was molested by her father and decided she didn't want to carry that anger and forgave him. And it has done well for her, and she treated him decently. I'm not even telling you to do that. I'm just telling you I know someone who did do that. But for the most part, you honor your parent. One more example. The number of adult children who won't speak to a parent because the parent voted wrong, usually for a Republican. This is amazing to me. Let me tell you this. If somebody didn't speak to their father or mother because they voted Democrat, I would think ill of that person. But it doesn't happen almost ever. It sounds almost absurd. My parent voted for a Democrat. I don't talk to them. But my parent voted for a Republican. Whew. Especially if it was Donald Trump, the Republican. Then the child thinks, oh, I won't even let my parents see their grandchildren lest they poison them. You must have very insecure beliefs if you think a parental visit is going to change your child's mind. I think you should be able to withstand that challenge. But that's really bad. That's morally bad. I won't speak to my parent. I won't let them see their grandchildren because they voted the way I wouldn't vote. It's a good example of why you need to feel at times that God commands you. Because if only your conscience commands you, it's very easy to fool your conscience into thinking you're terrific. Bad people do that all the time. So, yeah, you don't have to love mom and dad or mom or dad, but you have to hold them heavy. All right, let's go to your questions here. Thank you. And now here we go.
I'm TJ Weaver. I'm 20 years old and I'm from Rochester, New York. And my question is, do you think that there is any more significant sign of a morally decaying society than ingratitude? And if so, what do you think it is? Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I did it, Megan. In one shot, I'm on a roll. Well, TJ, is there any greater indication of a morally decaying society than ingratitude? And if so, what? Well, let me say this. On my list of really, really detestable traits in the human being, ingratitude may be the first. So I share with you the isolating of ingratitude is particularly awful trait. Particularly awful. An ingrate is an ugly person. By the way, in my chapter on gratitude in my happiness book, I point out, gratitude is the mother of both goodness and happiness. Grateful people are good people and happy people. Ungrateful people are bad people and unhappy people. That's how important gratitude is. It's the mother of both the moral and the emotional. So yeah, I would say that is a big characteristic of a crumbling society. And I would say a big worry I have about America. To grow up in the freest country in history, the most affluent country in history, the most opportunity-giving country in history, and be ungrateful for it, you're pretty loathsome. Sorry. I don't care if you're black. I don't care if you're Hispanic. I don't care if you're gay. I don't care if you're a woman. I don't care if you're a Muslim. Every category of human there is extremely lucky to be an American. Every single one. And if you don't think you are, you're an ingrate. And that doesn't speak well for you. I remember at one of the universities I spoke, because I invite people who differ with me to come to the microphones first. So a young woman, a student at this university, gets up and said, you don't believe that women are oppressed? And I was thinking, and I said it, not just thought it. You're at a $50,000 a year university in this gorgeous dorm room with some Olympic-sized swimming pools and saunas, and nothing is demanded from you except that you read some books and write some papers. And you're telling me you're oppressed? You don't even know what the word means. And I mean that. I think she didn't know what the word meant. Women are not oppressed in America. Nobody's oppressed in America. Actually, the closest we had to oppressed were the non-vaccinated. I mean, they literally couldn't enter places, kicked out of the armed forces, kicked out of schools. I mean, but of course, that's not regarded as oppression. That's not regarded as oppression. But women, they're oppressed. They should be, every group should be grateful. You know, my dad, may he rest in peace. My dad wrote a paper on anti-Semitism in America. I'm a Jew. He's a Jew. He was a Jew. He wrote a paper on anti-Semitism in America at the City College of New York, where he graduated from. I've been taught to say from. And yet, this man volunteered. He was not going to be drafted. Volunteered to serve in World War II. He spent nearly 3 years in the Navy as an officer on transport ships, and taught my brother, my older brother, and me, his two sons. Basically, we were the luckiest Jews in Jewish history to be American. This is the guy who wrote his term paper on anti-Semitism in America. Yes, you can chew gum and walk at the same time. You can acknowledge there was anti-Semitism and still how lucky you are to be in this country. 3 million blacks have moved to this country from Africa and the Caribbean in the last few decades. And you'd have to argue they're stupid. If America is systemically racist, why would they move here? But they're not stupid, because they know how lucky you are to be a black in America, or a Jew, or a gay, or a woman. So I hadn't thought of it the way your question put it, but it's a good point. There is a decay taking place when a good chunk of your population is ungrateful. What's our timing?
29 minutes, so either a quick question or you wrap it up.
Either a quick question or wrap it up. Let's take a vote. All those who think I should take a quick question, raise your hand. Okay. So I see 600,000 hands up. Let's see here. Yeah, I could do this fast. Charles, Boca Raton, Florida. Dennis, we agree about self-esteem and self-love. What about self-acceptance? If I do something morally wrong, I can condemn my behavior and still accept myself as a person. Your thoughts. So here, you're going to like this. I have a thought. Ready? Judge yourself exactly the way you judge others. That's it. If somebody you knew did something morally wrong, how would you judge them? You would judge them on their behavior, correct? So this is a viewpoint I learned many years ago. Most people judge others by their behavior, and they judge themselves by their motives. So they give themselves an out. Oh, I meant well. I didn't mean to hurt you. But did you judge the guy who did hurt you the same way, or the woman who did? Probably not. So as long as you judge others and yourself in an equal manner, that's fine. That's a quick answer. And frankly, this is my view. You should judge yourself and others by your behavior, not your motives. Your motives don't matter. Everybody, or just about everybody, means well. And it doesn't add up to a can of beans. Watch my PragerU video on intentions, about how good intentions don't mean anything. It's a good one. It's 5 minutes. Great to be with you. Honor your father and mother. See you next week.